Today, my guest has worked for some of the biggest names in tech. From Amazon to Facebook, the former president of Pinterest has left all behind to start a new business. In this episode, we'll talk about the tech epidemic, starting over, and the future of his new endeavor, Moment. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to introduce to you my guest, Tim Kendall. Tim, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you today because you are a man on a mission. For those who are not familiar, tell us about Moment.
Yeah, it's really a mobile app, and the point of it is to really help people use their phones in healthier ways. I think that most of us have this experience with our phone. Our experience falls into a couple buckets. One is that we have a lot of things that we do on our phone that are just terrific and wonderfully productive for our lives. And then we have a set of things that we do on our phones that really take a lot of our time and our attention. And at the end of doing them, we don't always feel that good about ourselves. And so I think about, you know, certain types of social media usage, online videos, sometimes just browsing the web. And what we're really trying to do at Moment is help people really understand how much they use their phones, how they use their phones, and then give them tools to change how they use their phone so they can actually feel a sense of well-being when they use their phone in a way that they didn't before. And then we have ways to keep you accountable for how you want to use your phone, you know, assuming that we help you come up with a way to use your phone that you think is healthy, that gives you psychological well-being. We then have a set of tools that hold you accountable to using it in that way so you can continue to feel good.
So how do you define psychological well-being? What does that mean?
I think it means that you are in general engaging in the behaviors and activities in life that are in your long-term best interest and are congruent with what you value and congruent with what you want your life to be about.
So you used to work for Facebook and for Pinterest, and then you decide to go to the dark side, or should I say to the light side? But tell me about the moment the light bulb went off and you decided to move on and start this project.
I think the light bulb went off a couple of years ago when I just found myself using my phone in a way, you know, to get back to your earlier question, in a way where I didn't feel like psychologically well. I felt like my phone was making me more frenetic and giving me more anxiety. You know, I think in general, when, you know, there's certainly a perspective that a lot of unhappiness in life comes from an inability to really focus on the moment, an inability to focus on the present, because we get trapped by regret of the past or fear of the future. And I think our phones, unfortunately, are wonderful at reminding us sometimes of things in the past and regret that we might have, or creating sometimes unproductive anticipation about the future. And I think that's part of the reason why they can be so anxiety provoking. And so a few years ago, I really found myself in that state a lot more often than I remembered ever being in that state. And I really concluded that my phone was just a huge, huge driver of that. And in fact, I started to experiment with leaving my phone, you know, turning it off when I got home from work and not using it at all until I got up the next morning. That was very hard to do because I was so habituated to just being on my phone really all night from the time I got home to when I went to bed. But when I did it, I felt a sense of liberation, and I sensed I had a sense of well-being that I hadn't experienced for a long time. And I guess, you know, to add one more point to the mix, there were moments where a few years ago, we just started having a family. And so I had two young daughters, and I would find myself in my pantry reading the news or watching a frivolous video, but not being able to stop and thinking, God, there is something broken about this, that this device can lure me into wasting my time in my pantry by myself while my new and young family is in the other room.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the well-being business, it's a big opportunity these days. And I wonder that perhaps you saw an opportunity to develop a product and make money in an area that doesn't really have a clear winner yet.
Yeah, I think from a business standpoint, you know, it seems like every year there's greater and greater awareness that our psychological well-being and behavioral health are just critically important. And I think there's a big opportunity to help people with that. And I think that our phones, or I should say unhealthy usage of our phones, I think is probably the biggest threat to our psychological well-being at the moment. So that's why I felt like going after that, in conjunction with this broader area of well-being, made a lot of sense.
You have definitely been very outspoken about the tech epidemic that has been happening the last few years. But what do you define tech? Are we talking about phone, computer, screens, or even podcasts?
I mean, I think what we're referring to is just, well, let's explain what we mean by tech epidemic. I think it's really just people using technology in a way that they can't really resist in the near term, but they feel bad about in the medium and long term because they don't like the medium and long term effects of how they're using technology. And those medium and long-term effects could be anxiety, it could be depression, it could be general unhappiness, it could be impact on their relationships. So I don't want to be misunderstood in arguing that all tech is bad and all phone usage is bad. I think there's wonderful technology. I think that phones can do delightful and amazing things in our lives. I just think that the epidemic that we're facing now is that an increasing amount of time on our phones is getting taken up by applications that, as I just said, are irresistible in the short term, but we don't like the impact of in the medium and long term. And that sort of definitionally is just those are the sorts of things that you don't, you know, as human beings are not good to keep going down that behavior path. And so I think that's how I would define it. And I do think that it can span gaming devices and computers. Although I think the lion's share of the opportunity to help people is on the phone and on the tablet. So on the mobile devices that are always with us, that we always seem to be unable to separate from.
Okay, so tell me how Moment would help me with my addiction of technology.
So you start out with Moment, and we're able to tell you, sort of give you a general sense of your usage. And this includes how often you use, how much time you spend on your phone a day, but also how many times you pick up your phone a day. And so we help people just with awareness. It is an important first step. In fact, for the users who come to us who just develop a sense of awareness of how much time they spend, on their phone and are interested in reducing that time, they're able to reduce their usage by almost 10%. Just by virtue of having a better understanding of how much they use their phone. There's quite a bit of research out there that all lines up around the same number, which is that people tend to underestimate the amount of time they spend on their phone by about 50%. So to put concrete numbers on that, the average person, at least in the US, spends about 4 hours a day on their phone. And if they're underestimating it by 50%, that means they think they're spending 2 hours a day on the phone. So you can imagine when people come to us and all of a sudden they're spending twice as much time as they thought they were. That in and of itself is a useful tool and a useful therapy to get people to be more thoughtful about how they use their phone. And then the other thing that we have is we have a feature that we don't charge for called Family. And what Family does is it actually allows you to add family members to a shared leaderboard so you can track and see how much each person in the family is using their phone every day, which we found is that visibility is super useful for families trying to really get their arms around how their family is using technology and possibly set up, you know, new guardrails for how they want to use technology as a family. It also has a feature embedded in it that allows you to set up screen free time for your family. So everybody collectively can agree to get off of their phones. And for those who get on during the screen free time, we send a persistent and nagging push notification. It makes it very unpleasant to be on your phone. And we hear great feedback about both components of that feature. And then, as you mentioned, we have a coach. The coach basically provides a whole bunch of courses that help people with various aspects of using their phones in healthier ways. And we offer two of the courses. We don't charge for them. And those courses really can help you through kind of a multi-day process, really understand how, not just how you use your phone, but why you're using your phone and the way that you're using it. So it puts you through a whole series of exercises that help people surface the triggers for why they use their phone when they do. Maybe they're feeling lonely. Maybe at night they get bored. And what we find is that when people start to understand the triggers, the emotional triggers, and then set goals for how they want to use their phone in a different way, they're able to understand what the prompts and the triggers are going to be so that they can behave in a different way. And then finally, as you mentioned, we have a whole series of coaching programs that we charge for. We charge a monthly subscription for those, and those are courses that work on specific dimensions of people using their phone in unhealthy ways. One really helps people with their attention span. A lot of people tell us who use their phone too much that it's impacted their attention span. We have a course that really gives families a step-by-step guide for how to think about using phones as a family and setting limits and setting guardrails. And then we have a whole 2-week course on how to get better sleep. So it really helps people think about setting guidelines with their phone usage that we have found can help people get better sleep.
Now, those courses and exercises that you're just talking about, are they designed and developed via research and database, or it's more like a common sense best practice?
I mean, it's not sort of endorsed in any official way by some sort of scientific advisory board. The courses are, however, grounded in the principles of cognitive behavioral therapy, which is the really leading behavior change psychological therapy that's out there that really has been proven to allow people to change behavior when they want to.
So I had Dr. Simon at the podcast, and she was making the point that there is a misconcept about attention span. She says that the research shows that our attention span hasn't changed much in the last few thousand years. That the biggest difference right now is that our brain is expecting to be stimulated more often to stay engaged. For somebody like you who has worked with some of the biggest social media platforms, that the main purpose is to keep people engaged, do you see the correlation, and would you agree with her point?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, you know, just working on technology products, you know, a lot of the folks that we hire at these companies, at Facebook, at Pinterest, at Moment, are engineers. And one of the things that is really important for engineers is that they can have uninterrupted time to build, to code these services, these applications. And there's quite a bit of research that we've read just in understanding giving those folks the best environment in which they can produce their best work, that interruptions are a death knell. They basically can reduce, I mean, context switching, which is what happens when you're interrupted, or by the way, when you interrupt yourself and, for instance, give attention to a push notification. There's significant research that show that not only does it decrease your productivity, it actually has a negative impact on your cognitive function, because that frenetic switching actually makes your brain work less well. And so it's very consistent with, and that's not research about Facebook the product or Pinterest the product. That's just research about how people who are working on the product, the environment that they need to be able to do great work and be creative.
What is like at the moment right now? What's the business culture?
I think culture is one of the most important levers that you have when you're building a business, and you know we're young. There are only about six of us at the company, and so the culture is still forming. But one of the great things about being at a company of that size is we can all fit in one room, and it's very early in our life. And so we can kind of all sit in a room right now and say, hey, what kind of company do we want to have? What do we want it to feel like to work here? And I think that that's a work in progress at the moment. I think we've aligned on the fact that in keeping with the product, we think it's really important for people to disconnect. So that's one of our core values, is that, look, when you're working on Moment, work on Moment. But when you leave and you go home to your family, disconnect. We don't have an expectation that people are on call or that they're checking their email after they leave work. And there's some practical constraints there, because we're an engineering company and we've got a services that's on 24/7, but we really are trying to put in place the processes that will allow the vast majority of people to leave work and completely disconnect and be offline. And we really encourage people to do that for the entire weekend as well. The other thing that we've aligned on is just this idea that, we want to be good to each other. We invest in this idea of being, and that doesn't mean that we don't hold each other accountable, and doesn't mean we don't give each other constructive feedback. But it does mean that we're careful when we give people constructive feedback to make sure that it doesn't come across as a personal affront. And so that's something that culturally we think is really important. And as I said, the rest of it is really a work in progress, which is, it's exciting that we've remained small. I don't think that's going to remain the case, because we're going to need more people to support this growing service. But at the moment, we have this luxury of being able to, almost like a laboratory, with such a small group of people, experiment with cultural tenets that we want to sort of try on for size. And if they work and they resonate, you know, they're things we may consider adopting. And if they don't, they're things that we can sort of easily reject, because the group for the moment is so small.
What are some of the day-to-day challenges you have to face?
Well, like any thing with software, you know, we have bugs from time to time that we have to contend with. We have customers who use the product who either expected it to work a certain way and it doesn't, or maybe they signed up for some of the coaching services and it's not what they expected, and so we have to, you know, in some cases, you know, give them a refund or explain to them where the misunderstanding came in. We have to hire people, and hiring people is always a challenge. And it's a challenge to convince people to join a 6-person company. There's certainly a lot of people who find that, I think the vast majority of people find that really scary. And so, because things are so nascent, and I think people assume if the company's small, maybe it's unclear if it's going to be successful in the long term. And so it's a challenge to attract people to a company, that only has a half dozen people. But the wonderful thing is that you do, from time to time, land on the person who loves Moment, loves what we're doing, and is really excited about the scale that we're at. They love the idea of a small company because it gives you some of the advantages that I talked about earlier with culture. For instance, that you can decide what kind of company. You get to be part of the decision-making process of what kind of company you want to work at. And that's super powerful for people, and a great lure for people. You know, even in a 6-person company, as the CEO, it's a challenge to be really clear about what direction we're headed in, and making sure that everybody understands what their part is in helping us head in that direction on a day-to-day basis. So even although there are lots of advantages of 6 people, you still have, as soon as you have more than one person, you have a communication challenge, which is that you have an ongoing obligation to make it really clear what direction you want to take the company in, and what are the things that need to be done, you know, in the next 90 days, the next 24 hours, et cetera, et cetera.
Earlier, you talked about bringing new people and staffing. What are the things you're looking for in future employees? What are some of the personality traits or experience you want them to have before joining your company?
I think the number one thing, I mean, look, there's sort of the basic criteria that they need to be. We're mostly hiring engineers right now, and so they have to be exceptional software developers. And so our other engineers who are already at the company, and our founder, Kevin Halesh, who is an engineer, really helps vet on that side. So assuming that the folks that come to us are exceptional, the number one criteria really after that is that they have a real passion for what we're doing. Often they too have struggled to use their phone in a healthy way, sustainably over time. And so, and maybe they've had some luck with that and they've seen what an impact it can have on their life. And they like the idea of giving that to other people in a product. That's sort of the perfect candidate, is someone who's just really excited about working on what we're working on. And obviously is good at building software too. That's kind of the dream candidate, the dream profile that we're looking for.
Oh, it's interesting that you said about the insecurity of someone to join a startup company, but you were the president for a large social media company and you had thousands of people working under you. I want to hear about the mindset when you took a leap of faith, you took a chance to leave all of this behind and start over again. Tell me more about that.
Well, I think I had been at Pinterest for almost 6 years and had really loved that time and really enjoyed helping build that company. I joined the company when there were a little over a dozen people and left when there were, I think, 1,500, 1,800. By the time it's that big, you know, there's a whole new series of challenges, which I enjoy, but I think I actually have more passion around the stage that Moment's at, the stage of really kind of figuring out what kind of company you want to become and what the product is actually going to be. And in fact, at Pinterest, the product was fairly well baked by the time that I arrived. I think I really helped scale the company and draw more users to the service. But in terms of figuring out what the actual product was, it didn't change dramatically from before I got there to you know when I left. Whereas in Momix's case, I think there is the big opportunity, and I'm really enjoying my partnership with the founder, Kevin Halash. I think there's a big opportunity to really evolve and expand and transform this product. I think what Kevin has built is tremendous and terrific, and we've got, you know, over 7 million people have used the product. And there really just aren't that many products in the world that are used by that many people. That said, I think we have an opportunity to grow it much larger and more impactful product. And so I was really drawn to that idea. And then the use case, the problem space, this idea of really helping people who aren't using their phones in healthy ways and as a result don't feel good, but don't really know when they're as they're sitting in that state of, you know, spending 4, 5, 6 hours a day on their phone and not being able to really refactor that usage into kind of a healthy relationship with their phone. I love the idea of being able to give them a product or a service that can really help change their well-being, change how they feel.
I think any CEO, it doesn't matter the size of the company, has to deal with certain level of stress and anxiety. How do you deal with that?
Oh, good question. Well, I'd say some days better than others. On my good days, I really try to be, and this is a lot of what the company is about and trying to create in people's lives. I really try to focus on the present moment. I mean, a lot of anxiety is created by imagining bad outcomes in the future. And what I have found is that the way to have less anxiety in my own head is just to really rein in my attention span and scope to the present moment. And I don't think that's easy to do. And I would say on my bad days, those are the days in which the scope gets really wide and I start, I'm hard on myself about something that I did last week that I'm not happy about, or I'm anxious that something that we're working on isn't going to turn out as well as I liked, as I want it to. But I think that, look, I think that the way that I've found the most impact on this point is just to really get my mind focused on the present moment. And when I do that, that's when I have the least amount of anxiety. I also think that regular meditation helps. I've talked to other leaders who swear by that and rely on a daily meditation practice to keep themselves grounded and present. And I do the same thing.
I'm interested because I'm one of those that rely on meditation to be a decent human being. And so my wife doesn't kill me, but, why did you decide to adopt the practice?
So it's interesting. I've only on the meditation front, I've only been meditating since August, really regularly. I mean, I had certainly tried it in the past, but I really got sick of hearing myself say, "Oh, I gotta start meditating. I gotta start meditating." And finally, I just in early August of last year, I just said, "Oh, I gotta just start doing it." And so I just started doing it. And I don't think I've probably in that span, which is 5 months or so, I think I've only missed like 2 days. And it does make a difference. How long have you been doing it?
For about 7 years now, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now for me, I'm one of those guys that like early mornings. So before even the kids are up, I got meditation in.
Good for you.
Limited day, I try to set some time apart to at least half an hour to kind of quiet down a little bit.
Yeah.
But in the personal life, what do you do for fun? What do you do on the weekends? What are the things that you enjoy to do outside working in building a startup?
Well, as you know, with young kids, that kind of takes over your life. So a lot of what I do is on the weekends is spend time with them. And I'm trying to, especially as they get older, not just spend time with them, but also try to figure out like specific kinds of projects that I can do with them, that we can work on together. So we just finished building, in our backyard, a sandbox, that they can play in. So we went to Home Depot and got the lumber and, put it together. Actually, I had to get some help putting it together, but so much of my free time is really oriented towards my kids and making sure that I stay in touch and spend time with, my close friends. I wish I had more interesting hobbies that I could share, but I think between Moment and raising a family and just trying to keep up with the other close relationships that I have, that's, I feel like at that point the there's no more time left.
Now regarding to Moment, where do you see the application going in the next 5 years? Do you see one day this becoming more than an application, perhaps like a lifestyle brand as well?
Yeah, I think that's possible. I think it's a ways off. I tend to believe we have so much left, so much opportunity and low-hanging fruit on the phone. Before we get into going beyond that. And I think even just remaining on the phone, I still think we can build and really have started to build already, I think, a consumer brand that people love. I do think from an optimistic view, I do think that the company could go beyond that. And could be more of a lifestyle brand, as you said.
Now, this is the time that everybody's waiting for. Would you recommend as a book that you think everybody should go and check it out?
It's a book that I'm in the middle of right now. It's a book called Why Buddhism is True by Robert Wright. And it's been remarkably eye-opening in terms of progressing my meditation practice. And so I think for anyone who meditates or is interested in meditating, it makes a really compelling case for why meditation is so important. And it also applies, it sort of gives you a paradigm for looking at life through the Buddhist lens, which to your earlier question about anxiety, I think is a terrific lens to look through when you want to feel less anxious. Because what I find is when I look through the Buddhist lens is I'm reminded how insignificant this life is, and also how distorted my own experience of this life is. And that being cognizant of the distorted conscious experience that we all have, and being aware that you can actually morph and change that to experience life in a more enjoyable way, I think is pretty profound. And Robert Wright just does a terrific job of articulating that perspective.
Tim, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. I wish people would take a page from your book and start pursuing business that will not only make the world a better place, but also help us connect with each other and improve our relationships. I really commend you for that. Now, before I let you go, do me a big favor and let everybody who's listening how they can find out more about Moment and how they can follow you on social media.
Yeah, so I mean the best way to get the app is just to go into either the Apple App Store or the Play Store on Android and just search for Moment. It'll be the first app that comes up, and then they can download it. I have a LinkedIn profile, so they can find me on LinkedIn. That's really the extent of my social media at the moment. But we do have an Instagram presence in the moment app that people can follow.
Quick question: what's your average screen time on your phone?
I'm in a little more than an hour a day.
Wow.
Yeah, but you know, to be fair, I have. I've done a bunch of things. I've removed things on my phone to really make it. I've removed a bunch of things on my phone to make it so that I spend just a lot less time. I don't have email on my phone, for instance, and I don't have a browser on my phone. So that getting rid of those two things reduces the time on your phone quite a bit. So really all that my phone is it's a device. It's a phone to call people. It's a text messaging, app and then a calendar. And then I also have Uber or Lyft on there and music and so forth.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Kendall.
Thanks, Yuri. Take care.
Hey everyone, make sure to like, comment, and let us know what you think. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.